disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with now.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo on some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't.
Welcome to This Is America, September 20th, 2018. In today's episode, we're going to talk specifically about Hurricane Florence and anarchist and autonomous disaster relief responses to it. Included in this episode will be two interviews, one with somebody recorded a few days ago that gives a good overview of the situation, both in terms of the impact of the storm and autonomous disaster release efforts, and another with a member of Blue Ridge Autonomous Defense, who talks with us about the work being done in the town of Wilmington, North Carolina, how anarchists and autonomists, through a network of planes, public buildings, and self-organized supply chains, have become one of the only relief networks on the ground, while the state simply tries to enact curfew. The reality of the true nature of the state in the face of the storm was made even more clear when yesterday President Trump flew out for a photo op, and during the press conference launched into familiar talking points about how prepared and amazing the government response was, and how the state had the best people, and how great the economy was doing. He then asked if the area near where one of his expensive golf courses were impacted by the storm, and after learning that it was unaffected, went across the street to ask a man with a yacht left in his yard by the storm waters if it was indeed his. When the man replied no, he stated, "At least you got a nice boat out of the deal." Trump then conducted a photo op of him handing out sack lunches of hot dogs, telling people to have a good time. But debris is about the only thing people in North and South Carolina will get out of the storm, as the areas hit the hardest are some of the poorest in the region. Now people are returning to their damaged homes and finding collapsing infrastructure and able to deal with the realities brought on by climate change, in an area where the government literally passed a law against using climate change data while preparing for disasters. Being that we live in a country where literally the average household can't even afford an unforeseen $500 expense, the impact of destroyed and damaged homes, often uncovered by insurance, will be, to put it mildly, devastating. Meanwhile, the Senate just passed a new spending bill, quote, and 80% of that bill, $675 out of $854 billion, consisted of military spending, a $60 billion increase over last year's military budget. To further drive the point home, remember how last time we talked about the realities of the growing deficit under the new Trump tax cuts, and how the working and middle classes are paying more than ever, while corporations and the wealthy are paying less? Well, the Trump administration already has a plan for how to fix the problem. Guess what? By making massive cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Meanwhile, the Republicans are pushing for even more rounds of tax cuts, which will only further cement all of these realities. Back in the Carolinas, 37 people have already sadly lost their lives, to say nothing of the thousands of farm animals, and almost a million are without power or access to basic services. According to one report, approximately 20,000 people in North Carolina were in emergency shelters as of Friday, with an additional 5,500 in South Carolina. There are also an estimated 400 evacuees in shelters in Virginia. NPR reported that the influx of internal refugees from the storm in North Carolina is so great that shelters are running out of cots. Most impacted are the poor, the elderly, and those living in rural communities, and also migrant workers, those that are undocumented, who are being targeted through checkpoints and at shelters by ICE. Perhaps the most horrific have been the deaths of two women being transported by sheriff's deputies who drowned after two officers left them locked in the back of a vehicle after they had climbed on top to avoid flooding. To further compound the horror is the growing threat of water contamination and pollution from hog farms, coal sites, and nuclear plants. Already, Duke Energy has reported two spills into waterways from coal plants. Sewage plants have lost power and flooded into rivers, and one nuclear power plant was cut off from personnel due to flooding. The impact of the industries is tied to the nature of capitalism itself. Both North and South Carolina are seen as the most business-friendly states in the country, with low regulations and government oversight. But while this has made corporations and wealthy business owners rich, it now threatens the lives and drinking water of millions. Hurricane Florence lays bare the realities of just what the American state is. It's a made in China, make America great again hat. It's a hot dog sack lunch from an orange-faced egomaniac. It's a rant about how great our economy is in the face of crippling poverty and devastation. And it's the realization that this system is more willing to spend billions on war toys than shelters and levees in order to save lives. This isn't a nation, it's a plantation. But in the face of this is a new material force that is rising, one based on autonomy, direct action, and the power of horizontal organization. This inspiring success of anarchist and autonomous action in North and South Carolina should be a wake-up call for all of us in the movement. We can create the kind of world that we want, and people are ready for it. Moreover, we can and will create the dual power that we desperately need, from autonomous clinics to community centers to distribution centers of goods and services built on lines of mutual aid and community control. In that spirit, let's get to the interviews.
Medieval America, it's your boy Whitey X with a burning ballot box and a flag to match. Billion dollar competition, woe to me, that's marketing. I got 99 problems and money is all of them. Trillion dollar bubble, that's college loans. Midnight SWAT raids against my comrades and new norms. PTSD of dreams patrolled by riot police. And I see many JFK in the Bay of Pigs. Pockets is empty, body is frail. Under the assumption the NSA is bugging my mail. Fuck them, they hate us exercising our rights, and would rather see the charade of exercising a vote. And a social Darwinism to some of our dreams, turning into graves, wise men who put the kings on guillotines. There was a renaissance, we in the midst of a renaissance. David Graeber put it best on his Google Talk. With all the technology and intellectual wealth, we don't need representatives, represent yourself. We in a soft police state, when it hits it feels like a kiss. And when we refuse to disperse his broken ribs, tanks ain't on the street, they weaponize the news. Losing the war, so let's open up the army for more recruits. That's why Obama's down for Latinos and gays. Plus he knows he'll never win on the economy.
Don't want no presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me.
Don't want no
presidents to represent me. To represent me.
I spit that black bandana shit that beats the tournament police or Miranda shit. Caught up in a quarter wind, dispersal orders, man. Cold ignoring them lungs, tear gas drunk till the hot cut out where hair passes real. Give a fuck about putting it down, cause when the bank pane glass breaks it makes a beautiful sound. Like you're in jail for mayday arrest, I'm facing time. We fight the class war, most rappers just run. When we act upon our conscience we get thrown in jail. The dead is president alive is raising money for bail. This feudal order don't work for me. We never got to vote for bombs dropped on Tripoli. Rulers of the world is what they pay to be. So when the fan hits the shit, pass an AK to me. It ain't a civic duty, it's a simulation of it. Born into a lie, ballot box, trips, say shit. Greece democracy collapse, communities govern block by block, the Athens commune. It's been a tough couple years, they pulled that through. But the media don't tell that story. They show cops on fire, we love that too. Who says you don't vote? You can't complain. It's like saying you gotta join the army to pick who we invade. He stole the presidency, now walks free for no reason. When Bush gets tried for war crimes and treason, I'll have
every old president to represent me. Every old president to represent me. Every old president to represent me. Every old president to represent me.
Don't want no
president to represent me.
Don't want no
president to represent me.
Don't want no
president to represent me.
Yeah.
Don't want no
president to represent me. Don't want no. This is going out to all the presidents.
Don't want no.
Before and after.
Don't want no.
I never voted for you. I never
don't
will.
Want no.
Never again.
Okay, we're joined with somebody that's in around the disaster area in North and South Carolina. We're going to be talking to them about what's happening on the ground in general. Do you just want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, hi, my name's Claire. I'm with River City Medic Collective in Richmond, Virginia, and I'm plugged into the disaster relief that's happening in largely North Carolina at this point.
So let's just start with the impact of the storm. I know that, you know, there's still flooding, obviously, and news is just starting to come out about the impact of, like, flooding into, like, coal ash Duke Energy sites and also hog farms and stuff like that. Just to the best of your ability, can you just tell us, as far as you know, just in terms of the impact of the storm, what it has brought?
Yeah, it's brought unprecedented amounts of rain and water. And I think it's really important because I think people, particularly the mainstream media, was hyping this up as sort of a wind event, but hurricanes are often about water, and that's what we're seeing in all over North Carolina and parts of South Carolina. It's just unprecedented flooding. Some of it we've seen in Southwest Virginia as well. So yeah, it's causing just huge amounts of pressure, on systems, like you said, coal ash, and then there's a wastewater break. There's been dam and levee breaks, in, Wilmington and Lumberton, and probably other areas as well.
Yeah, you brought up a couple towns. I think Wilmington is one that's, we've been seeing a lot on social media. It seems that the roads literally have been small bridges have just been like literally washed away by floods. Can you just talk about some of the areas that are the hardest hit right now that people are trying to get to?
Yeah, there's Wilmington's being described as an island, which is devastating. There's Lumberton, which is pretty much, it's a smaller town, but it's pretty much in the same situation as Wilmington, and it's a lot of indigenous folks. The Lummi tribe is in Lumberton, North Carolina. And then there's even smaller areas more north of North Carolina that are seeing some of the same stuff. People have been rescued off roofs and out of their homes as water just rises more and more every day. They're getting some dry skies today, but the water, from what I'm hearing, is continuously rising still.
Oh, wow. Can you talk about, in terms of just the state's response, how do people feel about it? Is it seem disorganized at all? Is it just kind of like in certain areas that they're just kind of showing up with supplies? How would you describe either the response from the state or FEMA?
It has been slow moving, and that's being generous. Yeah, from what I'm hearing, it's almost like it's largely autonomous mutual aid networks that are doing the work. And I don't necessarily mean, leftist or anarchistic mutual aid networks, but still non-hierarchical in the way that they are functioning, just like quick relief. People like the Cajun Navy and, those sorts of response are there, but the state is really not showing up. I'm hearing that today there's a little bit more of a response from them, but of course they come in and they start trying to control the flow of supplies in a way that's actually harmful.
Can you just, we've heard that term, the Cajun Navy, come up a couple times. Can you just tell us what that is for those that don't know?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the best person to speak to this, but they're folks from the southern region of the U.S. that I think it's a lot of veterans and people like that that might not share the same politics as us, but they do show up to disasters and get people out, and they often have boats and have a lot more equipment than other organizations might.
And it's something specifically for disaster type situations, or?
Yeah, seemingly so. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk a little bit about the disaster relief efforts. We know that Blue Ridge Autonomous Defense, I believe that the account that they're running on social media, they've shown themselves bringing in supplies via plane, which is
impressive.
Yeah, and I believe that they now have, it appears on social media, I mean, this is all kind of like what we've been able to glean from photos and like tweets and stuff, but they have some sort of distribution point or a space that they're giving out supplies.
I think there's actually multiple spaces. So some of the areas that are hard hit are really hard to get into. So people are kind of staging in Asheville and Durham and even, I mean, as far up as Richmond and Roanoke and all these areas, and then driving or flying stuff in as they can. I know that the pilots and the mutual aid networks are pretty well connected and autonomously organized. So, like, I don't think that the pilots are with one single organization or anything. They're just kind of people... loose networks of folks that have joined together to do airdrops.
Wow, that's really...
I know. It's impressive.
Yeah, it's really awesome. We've also heard of groups like the Socialist Rifle Association bringing in supplies. We're trying not to leave any...
Oh, good. I haven't heard of that. That's good.
Yeah, I know they've been like bringing in truckloads of stuff. There's like a... plethora of groups that are just doing disaster relief stuff. I'm trying not to leave anybody out.
I mean, I think it would be impossible to not leave anyone out. I mean, it's pretty far reaching. So I would, you know, there's IWW and DSA and like some of more of the student groups types. And then there's anarchist organizations and people are, you know, restaurants are holding supplies and it's pretty far reaching. So,
Do you know anything?
Meta collectives.
Do you know anything about in terms of you brought up that you were with a meta collective, or how are the meta collectives that you know about? How are they working within this situation? Are they doing anything in particular, or are they just part of the larger effort?
It's part of the larger effort. I mean, medics are there in largely for rescue at this point. I mean, because it. Like I said, the waters are still rising, so they're still taking people out of homes. I know that there's a big need for, like, fungal sprays and that kind of thing because of so much water. So we are seeing injuries and illness related to that much water. And I think that's what medics are dealing with. A lot of children, there's a big ask for baby supplies. So I think there's a lot of just sort of care that's needed on the ground that medics are helping with.
Do you have any idea in terms of, like, today, I think on the Blue Ridge Twitter, they showed a photo of a house that the roof had collapsed. I know in Hurricane Harvey, that was like a huge thing where people had to spend literally weeks and months gutting houses and stuff like that. But do you have any idea as far as like, any guesstimation in terms of like when like the water will get to the point where it has receded and then people will have to basically deal with the aftermath of the floods? Do you know how far away that will be?
It's going to take a lot of time. And I say that because we need more hands and we're going to need more people, and North Carolina needs more people. They're going to need relief for the workers that have been busting their asses down there. But that's going to take months and months. I mean, cleanup in reality takes years for each disaster, you know, and then often these places get hit each year. So hopefully that's not the case, but as you know, hurricanes ramp up in severity and, strength, then that's what makes it even harder. But I can say on these very large threads that I'm in that, cleanup is already being planned and talked about before the waters are even close to receding. So people do have it in the forefront of their minds that those are the next steps after getting the supplies and relief needed, immediate relief needed to the folks on the ground community.
Awesome. So if anybody's listening to this that either wants to donate money or supplies, or if they can actually come out and volunteer, how would you direct them?
A lot of the crews are using Venmo right now because things like GoFundMe and that kind of thing, or even like Facebook fundraisers, take forever to pay out, and people need a flow of funds much faster than that. So, I mean, hashtag Mutual Aid Disaster Relief or MADR should lead you to a bunch of flyers on Instagram or Twitter that have different different fundraisers. But I know one of the main fundraisers is Venmo at Paul G hyphen 36. So that's Paul G hyphen 36. And that seems to be one of the most widely spread for North Carolina, specifically Wilmington. And then we have an organization in Richmond that we like to work with called Interfaith Alliance for Climate Justice. That's a 501c3 fiscal sponsor for a couple autonomous mutual aid networks. And their Venmo is at Interfaith Climate Justice. And we are trying to raise money for specifically Lumberton for Indigenous communities so that we can earmark some funds for them. But we're also taking in money for the larger relief efforts as well.
Awesome. And in terms if anybody wants to get in the car right now and drive and get involved, where would you tell them to go? Should they go to like Firestorm in Asheville to kind of like get linked up or somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, I really would feel uncomfortable telling people to get in the car as of yet. It's changing hour by hour, but as of yesterday, rescue people on the ground were like, do not come down here. And that's to Richmond folks that were ready to roll. That being said, people do arrive daily, so it's just kind of a matter of who's willing to fight through a lot of barriers to get to these places and who needs to be held back and come later, you know, because both are very important. But yeah, I would just start getting in touch with people on social media and asking those questions more directly to the organizations on the ground. Firestorm is a great place to probably ask that, and it's Asheville seemingly is pretty safe. I know Durham was getting some flooding and they're taking a lot of relief workers in Aiden, but I think Asheville's even less of a barrier.
Awesome. Yeah, I just bring up Firestorm. It's a info shop and bookstore because I know that they're collecting supplies.
Yes, majorly.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that people need to know? Obviously, there'll be so much more work to do in the weeks and months that go forward. So people, you know, this isn't going away anytime soon, unfortunately, but is there anything else you want to bring up or talk about?
There isn't really, other than we're super grateful of everybody's help. Every single dollar helps. I mean, $3 gets us a lot more than somewhere like Red Cross or donating to these bigger orgs would get you. So I'm strongly recommending that people think about, you know, switching their fundraising efforts to mutual aid networks that are much faster and swift at getting aid on the ground. And there is an Amazon wish list going around, unfortunately, because this is a signal call. I can't switch over and find the link, but I will send it to you as soon as we're done with this.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much and stay safe out there.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good one.
Yeah. It's an election year, yeah. Are we supposed to give a shit about us saying what? I guess I've seen too much this year. The pharaohs got decapitated, but King James is still here. And I'm supposed to push Barry Hussein to do what he got voted in on. 4 years later, I got dissed endlessly for saying my president is black. Didn't mean jack to me then, a poor choice of words. Like assassination, listen, habeas corpus. Pour out a little bit for PTSD soldiers sleeping in civic in a park, sorry. The American dream sleeps on veteran administration. Too busy playing insurance games with your life, it's only life. Besides, you're gonna go to heaven and your benefit checks will be waiting for you, cause Lord knows the votes they've been done emptied while we occupied every street and the liberals ran back to vote. Talking about we gotta push the government to do what's right. Honestly, fuck the government, I'm just waiting for it to crumble. We all know cancer is bad. It's bad for you. The state,
is a cancer.
Non-workers of the world unite. Wear black, fight back. Fuck that. False arrest and the police. I'm suing you back. Shouts to the National Lawyers Guild. My homie Reno got his arm broke on some keep your First Amendment in a voting booth. And Hickenlooper wants to build a mall on the moon. So much vacant land in my city, but it's illegal to sleep outside in my city. We got drones over Denver, drones over Pakistan. This beat I'm rapping on says money is the answer. Money is the answer. If the question is why we do mostly toil, money is the answer. If we're asking what's the root of all evil, why do politicians lie and play smooth criminal? Fool me twice.
You know, there's so much to talk about. I guess the first question is that we're seeing a lot outside of the area of the impact of, like, you know, hog waste facilities. I know that, like, one nuclear power plant was, like, you know, surrounded by flooding and people couldn't even get to it. There's been, like, a couple Duke Energy spills. Can you speak to any of that? Or, you know, what is known so far just about the impact of all that stuff?
Well, I can't really speak to it too much just because I haven't been able to really follow the news. I do know that that water that has the Duke Energy coal ash and the hog waste in it is making its way to Wilmington now. And so what the city chief scientist or biologist is saying is that floodwaters will continue to rise here until probably like Monday or Tuesday. And in that floodwater is going to be all that toxic waste. I think the waste management plan a couple of days ago, maybe been here since Thursday, so maybe Friday or Saturday, said that they had the largest spill ever of you know, wastewater into the Cape Fear River. And so we've been handing out, what we did with that was, you know, we were finding people wading through water, people in apartments that were flooded, bottom floors are flooded, and they're living in a top floor. So just encouraging people to keep their feet clean, and we've been handing out like antifungal creams and stuff to try and battle that. But it, you know, the state rolls in with their hazmat suits, and people in need are walking around in flip-flops and waist-deep water. So imagine that there's going to be, you know, continued health effects from that. What we've been seeing a lot of too is people's with their roofs collapse in their houses, but they have nowhere to go, so they're breathing in black mold and insulation and everything else that's been in their walls for, you know, the past 50 years or so. So not really looking forward to see what all that water coming this way is going to bring and how it's going to affect people, but it's definitely going to affect people.
Yeah, and I'm just curious if we can get your thoughts about it. I mean, President Trump came through, I believe, the other day, and you know, I don't know. I'm sure you've heard this, but he went over to a gentleman across the street from kind of where he did his little spiel about how great the economy was and how great the response was. And there was somebody sitting in the yard, and a yacht had basically been brought with the storm and had, you know, rested on the person's yard, and there's just a bunch of debris. And he asked if that was their boat, and they said no. And he said, he turned around and said, well, at least you got a boat out of it. And later he was handing out sack lunches with like hot dogs in them and stuff. And he said, have a great time or have a good time. And people were just kind of, you know, shocked by this. But I'm just curious, you know, what is your thoughts on Trump coming, and are people talking about this? I mean, are people angry at the government response, or is this kind of what they expected?
Well, we're working in a predominantly neighborhood of black folks and stuff, so they already understand that the government is not going to help them. Some folks, you know, it's been really hot here, and so they've had no power, no one to check on them. I've seen one FEMA person this time. The FEMA distribution points here in Wilmington are only handing out water. First, they were doing one case of water, one case of MREs. Then they bumped it up to 2 days' worth, which is three cases of water, three cases of MREs. I know that when Trump came in, he came into Wilmington Airport and not shut down our airlift operations that were bringing in supplies for the day. But the people here, like, they already know. And so we've been talking to folks about the government response and more so the lack of it, and the way in which mutual aid and the stuff that we're doing right now is, you know, working to not just provide charity, but to get to people and bring them in and talk about these things and politicize them around these things. And they already have an understanding of it. So the folks here weren't looking for Trump for anything. I think some of them wanted to toss some paper towels at him or something at one point, but
Right.
Yeah, so he didn't even stop in Wilmington. I think he went to New Bern specifically because that is, like, I think a more predominantly conservative area. So his asshole response, it seems right on par for all of that. Just whatever, you can't even say it's a lack of empathy. It's just I mean, I'm not surprised, and the folks around here are not surprised at the response. Some of the neighborhoods we're working in are relatively close to the airport, and so, you know, they constantly see Blackhawks and military helicopters flying over top of them, but no one's stopping in. Police driving through, waving at them, taking pictures, but not stopping and seeing if they need any assistance or anything like that. So it's been a pretty, I would say, government negative response in this area. Red Cross does have vehicles serving hot meals in some places, but we're serving hot meals out of our place, and those have been provided through a local food pantry, Habitat for Humanity, and then a nonprofit called World Central Kitchen, which has provided us lunch and dinner for 150 people each time for the past, probably the past week, I believe, once we found them. So the response, if these folks were going to wait on a government response, I'd say they'd still be waiting.
Well, let's talk about what the autonomous forces are doing. You mentioned two things, that you are operating out of a facility, and also that there's airlifts that are bringing food and supplies in. Can you just talk about both of those things? I think a lot of people are wondering, how did you, you know, there's a, like, for instance, there's a tweet that's going around that said, like, you know, the first people that got to Wilmington was not the Red Cross or the Army. It was a bunch of sleep deprived anarchists. But I'm just curious, how did you get to the point where you were able to connect with people that had access to planes, and also how is the infrastructure in terms of, like, spaces and stuff like that working out?
Yeah, so we were, I guess, you know, the first relief organization in Wilmington. We drove 7.5 hours through basically the eye and the second wall of the storm. I'm pretty sure we drove through a tornado at one point because we had winds coming from both sides, left and right of the road, and tornado warnings going off. And we were going through water and around power lines, and somehow we made it in. And we were pretty isolated. Wilmington turned into an island. So folks, rad folks back in the Triangle Durham area, honestly, I can't even speak to how they've been able to secure the air stuff. But I know at one point the military was relatively upset that the anarchists were the only other organization flying in supplies to the Wilmington airport. And so I know that in 2 days we've done 82,000 pounds of supplies into, not just into Wilmington, but into North Carolina in general. And some folks have been working unbelievably hard back in Durham and in the Triangle area, coordinating that and getting that operational. We've done probably like 4 to 5 planes a day, and the supply, they're small Cessnas, so the supplies that they're able to bring, it's not a lot, but what we do is we just continuously roll them and then load up the trucks and bring them back to our distro point. So our distro point is out of a community nonprofit, like, basically located at the center of the neighborhoods that we're working in, and they have a 4,000 square foot, like, garage area that they use. It looks like they have a stage in there, so, like, plays and dancing and stuff. And we've been able to set up tables in there and just keep a continuous inflow of supplies that have been provided from everyone, from, like, the local food bank to us purchasing with the funds that have been donated. We've made major runs to grocery stores now that grocery stores have been somewhat open, and then also even the Muslims for Humanity just donated a bunch of baby supplies to us because we stopped by their mosque to make sure that no reactionary people were messing with them or anything like that, and they offered up supplies in solidarity. So it's pretty much like we find a distro point that maybe the city's running or some other nonprofit's running, but they're not moving into neighborhoods, and then we convince them to give give us supplies and we bring them back to our distro point. And so the distro point's been pretty rad in that, like, we, the people that we helped on Monday have self-organized and are, have set up a complete, like, distribution logistics chain in order to get food out into the communities. We still have street teams operating. We've lost a couple of vehicles. So the work that we want to do in the community as far as, like, debris cleanup and patching has kind of had to go on pause as we're doing mostly supply runs at this point. But the community center we're at has also allowed us to sleep on the floor in there. So we've been sleeping on the floor and just waking up and going straight to work and then, you know, ending pretty late. I think it's something between like 12, 14 hour days for the past week since we moved into there. We moved in on Monday.
And you said the army is upset that the anarchists are doing this. Can you just elaborate? Did they say this or?
That's what came through our loops, our threads on that first day when we had the first planes come in. I think they were operating off of that, the same runway. And so I don't know where their supplies are going. I don't necessarily know where they're even doing work. I talked to one of the Chinook like crew. Chinook's a helicopter. So one of the helicopter crew folks. And I was like, have you been to Lumberton? Because that's a place that is in desperate need of supplies. That's flooding, has a large indigenous population that is suffering. And they were like, well, we flew over it, you know, so they're not really forthcoming with information, but they have been sure to fly around the neighborhoods and spotlight the neighborhoods after curfew, though. So not 100% sure what their purpose is or exactly what they're doing. But at the distribution points that they're running, there's also Customs Border Officials, DHS and ICE that are manning those points too. So, you know, like definitely dissuading people from coming that may be threatened by that presence. And so those are the people that we're trying to reach.
Seems very much like a military occupation. It seems like there's lots of buildup and repressive forces and resources being spent, but you know, they're basically either worried about the population exploding or they're seeking to manage the disaster that's unfolding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say like the first couple of days were pretty heavily like large police vehicles because of the state of emergency. All the state like vehicles and stuff were the only ones getting fuel. People were desperate for fuel. I've heard that there's been one shooting earlier in the week over fuel. Right now, gas is not necessarily in short supply, but with the flooding and the fact that Wilmington only has one road open now into the community, it's something. If that road were to flood, then we go back to the same issue where fuel and food becomes a depleted resource. And these communities that we're working in, they've already spent all the money that they've had. They've already spent their EBT just preparing for the storm, just to get through the regular storm. And so now we're working on like going into our second week of relief efforts. And so if it wasn't for like autonomous or the type of food that distribution that we're doing, I think folks would be in much more desperate need and much angrier. So some folks have, you know, they've been angry enough to talk about taking the streets and just blowing off steam and stuff, but it's been rough. And I just like, other than police harassing and arresting people after curfew in the neighborhood and stuff, I haven't seen or heard of really any government response in the neighborhoods that we're working in. Some folks have, we're the only people that have reached out to them, the only people that have like contacted them to see what they need.
And the curfew is set up to stop people from looting?
That's what the police have said, is that it's specifically to prevent looting. And we've had some like relatively, they haven't even been like consistent on when the curfew starts. And so some folks have said 8 o'clock, some folks have said 10 o'clock. And we, you know, we've talked, not only talked to the police directly, but then you go on their website and it says something completely different. It's just an excuse, and what they're doing is, I think what we've heard is that any type of charge of looting or anything like that within the state of emergency is automatically a felony. So definitely using it as just an excuse to target people.
Right. And again, I mean, looting, I mean, we're talking about people going into a Dollar General and taking
Yeah, and that Dollar General is not even looting because the store manager. And I need to like just frame like loot. If you're starving, if you're hungry, if there's food lines for 3 hours outside of a Harris Teeter, and they're only letting three people in at a time, like there's people power there to take it. I've had a couple breakdowns within the grocery store now just to see the abundance of stuff and to walk into people's homes that can't even get out of the bed and their entire refrigerator is rotten and then nobody's checking on them and stuff like. What is looting at that point? It's just a matter of survival. So, it's been pretty disgusting. And I would say that like capitalism is on like full effect at this point. Rite Aids and all these stores boarded up windows and armed guards out in front and stuff as people are like literally starving. So it's been pretty intense in that sense.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I wanted to touch on is that we've seen photos of zine tables, and I know people have like like black flags up in the distribution space. I mean, I think that's actually really cool. I think that this is a time, I mean, you know, with climate change and just how serious this stuff is, I mean, I think we need to be really upfront about why we're doing this. I mean, the government obviously is upfront about why they're doing what they're doing, but I'm just curious the feedback y'all have gotten about, because I'm sure people are curious, you know, why are you doing this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we're doing it because if we don't do it, no one else is going to. And we want to show that like it doesn't take the state to provide. And oftentimes, if you were to only rely on the state to provide, then you're going to go without. And so folks can come together and the community can self-organize and take care of itself. Like the only thing we've used the government distribution center is to scheme off their supplies and bring it to the people because we're not going to restrict it in the same way that folks are going to do. And so, you know, we've passed out zines in some sense, and we've talked to people about the state. But even just passing out like trauma zines based that Mutual Aid have printed and brought with them. You know, I talked to a lady last night, and she's like, "I've always been an anarchist. I just didn't know it." And it's pretty awesome to hear her talk about the autonomy of her body and the way in which the state still claims ownership over us and everything. By making us citizens of whatever country, you know, and so it's pretty rad, and it's actually really inspiring, and it feels really good. And so there's a lot of folks here that don't need to be radicalized, and they just, you know, they're already operating outside of the structures of the state just because of who they are. So just being able to like lift that up and to fly a black flag, like we're super happy to be doing that, and we'll continue to do it as long as we can.
Well, just going into the future, what do you see the next couple days and weeks looking like? You know, you're just going to keep going as long as you can. Is there other facets to this that you hope to grow? I noticed like there are photos of like a clinic being set up and stuff like that. Seems to be kind of along the lines of what was organized in Florida and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have a long-term plan to stay within the community as long as we have space to operate. And if not, we're making the community connections to where we can keep with these people. And like this, these people are part of us now. And so I think to just to walk away from that, and I'm gonna have to leave here within the like next week or so, and just the thoughts of walking away from it and going back to like some semblance of reality is actually pretty daunting. But there's definitely continued need within some of the more rural areas outside of Wilmington. They're still being ignored. Like I said, Lumberton is in desperate need. They've been flooding. They've had dam failures and levee failures and people on rooftops, and they're pulling bodies out of water. So there's a definitely continued relief effort still needed, and folks are coming down from all over. There's a saw truck coming from Oregon all the way down here to help cut trees for folks because there's still trees on houses, trees on cars, trees in the roads. And you know, the state continues to prioritize. We saw 7 tree trucks within the, like one of the wealthier neighborhoods driving around the same time that folks hadn't had power for 3 days. And so people, I think the wealthiest neighborhood in Wilmington had power power within a day or less after losing it. And so there are still neighborhoods without power, and without power, people can't cook. They can't have clean water. A lot of folks are scared about the water to begin with, just because of the flooding and the waste and everything. So I think autonomous efforts are not going to stop here anytime soon. We have a lot of work to do.
Awesome. Anything else you want to add? We'll definitely have links to where people can donate if you want to put that Vimo out once more, though, just so people can get familiar with that.
Yeah, our Venmo is at Paul G-36, and then I'll send you some other Venmos and release things that you can put in the show notes. But also want to lift up again the anti-fascist work that's going to be going on in Appalachia on the 29th against the League of the South. Like, you know, we're here doing this, but we're also thinking about, like, just the state in which we are. It's a multifaceted thing that we're doing, and so we need to fight it on every front. And then just the work that's going on against the Mountain Valley and ACP pipelines in West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina, that stuff hasn't stopped either. So
awesome. Hey, thanks so much for talking with us, and best of luck once again.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.